Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Kevin Hohalter, and I'm here representing Patrick Cusdy, the appellant. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes.
Four minutes, okay.
There are a large number of issues that have been raised in this case, but I'd like to focus first on the dead man statute, which is one of the main reasons given by the trial court for dismissing Cusdy's claims on summary judgment. The trial court believed that the dead man statute applied to bar all of Cusdy's testimony and that therefore there were no issues of fact raised. But the dead man statute was waived by Landis, either by submitting declarations of Landis and Wallen, which testified that there was no agreement between these parties, or by testimonial statements made by counsel in the first and second amended summary judgment motions. In those motions and the statement of facts, counsel relates numerous facts that are not supported by any evidence, and to the effect of there was no agreement between Cusdy and Landis. That's what triggers the dead man statute. Landis raised the facts first. That opens the door for Cusdy.
But didn't they amend? Didn't they amend their motion memorandum and withdraw that information?
Well, they didn't expressly withdraw anything.
They filed an amended
memorandum twice, actually, a first and a second amended.
And in the trial court's order, he relied on the amended material. He didn't rely on the original material.
That is what the court indicated. Correct. But even if those declarations were withdrawn and not considered, it's the statements by counsel in the first and second amended memoranda that also waive the statute. Because counsel tries to do himself what his clients can't do, which is testify that there was no agreement. That statement of facts, which is not supported by any declaration, either directly or by inference, says there was no agreement between these parties. And testimony as to what an agreement was or was not implicates the statute. So they brought the evidence, they stated those facts first, and that waives the statute. It opens the door. And Cusdy then submits his declaration, which rebuts those facts and creates a material issue of fact as to the existence of that agreement to convey the land and the Nova mobile home, and the fact that Cusdy performed his part of the deal. We get into the doctrine of part performance. Cusdy had exclusive possession of the land from if I'm remembering correctly, about 83 to 96, a period of more than 10 years.
What do you do about the statute of frauds? That's a basic real estate concept.
Right. So the statute of frauds ordinarily requires a writing for a conveyance of land. Here they had an oral agreement. But there's the doctrine of part performance, which removes, if the elements of part performance are met, it removes that transaction from the statute of frauds. It becomes enforceable.
And how specifically do you rely, what evidence do you rely on in the record for part performance?
It is primarily the declaration of Patrick Cusdy. And
which has its own problems.
Well, there's the dead man issue, but the evidence that of the elements of part performance is not testimony of a transaction between the parties. For example, the first element on part performance is exclusive possession of the property. And Cusdy testified, I had exclusive possession. That's not testimony about a transaction with the deceased. That's what did Cusdy do? He possessed the property.
But for part performance, don't we still need to have all of the elements of an agreement in place?
the cases are not clear as to what details are required. There's been an assertion that a legal description, for example, would be necessary. But that, I think, is not required by the cases that deal with part performance. As to other material terms, so counsel argued in the briefing that cited to the Becker case requiring certain terms in a contract to convey real estate. That case raises five terms that are required. One, the subject matter of the agreement. That's the real property and the Nova mobile home, because he testified to that. Two, that the parties to the agreement, Cuzdies as purchasers, Landis as sellers, Cuzdy testified to that. Three, the promises that are made between the parties. Landis promised to sell the property, Cuzdy promised to pay for it through a combination of cash payments and labor. Cuzdy testified to that. Fourth, consideration, Cuzdy testified to that. It was either $9,000 or $10,000 for the land and over $14,000 for the mobile home. Fifth, other terms and conditions. One of those other terms was that Landis would keep the paper title to the property until the loans were paid off, because he testified to that. So all of those terms of a contract are there. We have evidence of them. And so that creates a disputed issue of fact that should go to a jury. And with that, I'll wait for rebuttal.
You have 3 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. Andrew Metzler here from Taylor Law Group, representing Patricia Landis. May it please the Court. I'd like to start by providing a little bit of context. I'm going to address his arguments, but I feel that you may have some questions and it may take some time. And I want to address, I feel like I have a dictate from Division One to talk about latches first. And before I do that, provide a little bit of context. Ms. Landis brought in...
Could you make sure that you speak up so
sure.
that...
Yeah. I apologize. I can speak up. Ms. Landis brought an unlawful detainer action. That's how this halt started in the summer of 2014. She did so because Mr. Cuzdy didn't have permission to be on the property anymore. He had been recently divorced. This is all in the documents. Mr. Cuzdy responded by filing a quiet title action. But it's really just a breach of contract action, a breach of oral contract. If you look at the second amended complaint, paragraph 4.2, and that's page 167 of the clerk's papers. It states defendant Landis's actions amount to a breach of contract. So just calling it a quiet title action. There's no, he requests specific performance and the alternative request damages.
Doesn't he also seek value for the Nova mobile home?
He does seek. He seeks value, and essentially, what I would say is that it's all based on an oral contract, and we're not talking about an encumbrance or a chain of something in a chain of title, or something that you would typically cure with a quiet title action. This is a breach of contract action. You can put the title quiet title on it if you want, but it's subject to the statute of frauds. As the trial court ruled, it's subject to the dead man statute. It's subject to statute of limitations. It's subject to latches. And in getting into latches, which I think this court from Carlson has a dictate to talk about, the alleged oral contract for the sale of real property. Now, this was allegedly made 30 years ago. We're talking about back in the 80s. We're talking about the sale of real estate. It's an oral contract. Moreover, we're talking 13 years after the person who he allegedly made the contract with died. You don't even have to get into the merits on this. There's a number of doctrines. I've mentioned them. The trial court, and I want to be clear, correctly decided this case on the statute of frauds and correctly decided this case on the dead man statute. And that's well briefed, and I'll rely on that. But I want to talk about latches again. Quoting Carlson, while it was unnecessary for the trial court to reach the issue of latches, we take a different approach, decide that the issue, decide that issue of latches first, and hold that the lawsuit is barred by latches. We believe that where latches bars an action, logic and judicial economy dictate, and that's why I'm saying it's a mandate for you guys to look at this, the court avoids substantive issues altogether. Now, I strive to make judges' jobs easy, and that's what I'm trying to do for you here. It's a Division I case. It's binding precedent. Notably, Mr. Cuzzi doesn't argue latches in his opening brief at all. Not once. Mentions the name of it, never argues it in the briefing. Typically, this court doesn't decide cases that aren't brought up in an opening brief. Issues in an opening brief, and that may be reason to dismiss this appeal in and of itself. But under the doctrine of latches, it's an implied waiver arising from the knowledge of a given state of affairs and acquiescence into it. The elements are knowledge, a reasonable opportunity to discover the potential claim, the unreasonable delay in commencing the cause of action, and damages to the defendant. You've got all of that met here. If this isn't a case for latches, I don't know what is. In Carlson, the plaintiffs had notice 3 years before they brought their suit. We're talking 3 years. In Landis, we're talking, depending on what you want to call notice, 30 decades, 30, 13 years, many, many years. Here, Cuzzi also had notice. He states in his amended complaint that the obligations of the alleged oral agreement were fulfilled long ago. Well over 15 or 20 years.
Does your argument on latches apply to the mobile home, the Nova?
Yes.
When would he have known that?
When would he have known
that he had a problem with the title to the Nova?
He was supposed to, under his argument, in his Second Amendment complaint, he's asking, he says that all of the obligations were fulfilled long ago. Now, the Nova has a separate title than the land has a certificate of title from the Department of Motor Vehicles.
Don't the Landises agree in their, I think it was their amended memorandum that the Cuzzi did make the payments on the mobile home?
That is noted in the memorandum, and I would say that there's cases that talk about when you wait too long to bring an action, either statute of limitations or latches. And even if a case has merit, they're still barred by not bringing the claim. And the Nova or the real estate under either the statute of limitations or latches.
Well, had he been living in the mobile home?
He had been living in the mobile home.
So what action would he have brought? Conversion? Living there, but even though it's really mine, you haven't given me title, so you've converted it, even though it's being put to my use. Is that what you're suggesting his suit would have?
I think he should have brought, as he has done, a breach of contract. But I'm saying that is an oral agreement and that the terms were fulfilled decades ago.
Well, did he know that they were never going to give him the title?
He was on notice. First of all, when Benny Landis died, entitled to either the Nova or the real estate was not conveyed to him. He was on notice when Miss Landis.
Well, he was on notice of what? He was on notice that the gentleman had died. Was he on notice that that meant that he was never going to get title, even though he'd performed? Someone told him that? Benny's dead now. We're never going to transfer title to you?
He alleges in his second amended complaint that he talked to Miss Landis in the early 2000s, and she did not transfer title then. I would say that is when he had notice. I mean, that's straight up in his Second Amendment complaint. But moreover, the community property agreement, that's noticed all the world. That covers every piece of property there is.
Did the trial court make a ruling on that?
It ruled that this action was barred by the statute of frauds and by the dead man's. It also said that it was barred by latches, the statute of limitations, and estoppel. Now, before I run out of time, I'm going to address the dead man statute arguments here now. But again, Carlson is founded on the stability of land and title. And if it's an absurd result if this case finds that someone can bring a claim 30 or 20 years later, 10 years later, whatever the case may be, and you can pick any one of those points. I encourage you to look through the Second Amendment complaint. But as to the dead man statute, again, the complaint was amended. It replaces the original complaint. That original memorandum of summary judgment was not even reviewed by the trial court. He testifies that,
I'm going to revisit this. Maybe I'm too interested in it.
But sure.
Latches is an equitable principle, and it's based upon how we reasonably expect people to behave. That's the underlying principle. So your reasonable expectation is that if I'm living in this mobile home on my in-law's property with my wife, and my mother-in-law indicates that she might not be transferring title of that mobile home to me, that my wife and her, even though we're living there, should sue her. And that's what the expectation in society is, and therefore, if it's not done, equity should bar it later on. That's pretty much your argument, right? Because that's how people behave.
My argument.
They're living there. They're in there. They're married. I know it's your mom. But, you know, there's this equitable principle out there. And reasonable people, reasonable daughters would sue their moms. That's what your claim is, right?
May I have time to respond?
Yes.
What I'm saying is that if you look at the evidence presented in this case, if you look at the declaration from either Mr. Cusdy or the Landis or Carla Wallen, that's all excluded from the dead man statute. Now, the only thing that you have in actual evidence in the record to show that there was a admission to the NOVA is all barred evidence. The only thing that you have in front of you is documentary evidence, and none of that establishes that the NOVA, there was any oral contract. Now, I understand that.
So that doesn't have anything to do with latches.
That.
Now you've abandoned latches.
I'm not abandoning latches. Latches can be.
Well, your answer, I've asked you about latches. You wanted extra time, and now you're talking about something other than
latches. Dead man statute is an evidentiary rule. So yeah. You're going to look at latches, but you have to look at the evidence presented under that doctrine. And so that.
Now you're telling me you didn't have a claim. That's not latches. Latches is I got a claim, but I didn't prosecute it.
There's no evidence of a claim, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You have 3 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate Judge Dwyer raising the family situation here. It was perfectly reasonable for Cusdy to wait and see what his in-laws would do when they told him, we'll give you title after a little while. He relied on that, as a son-in-law ought to. And he had no knowledge that Landis was making an adverse claim to this property until 2014, when Landis brought the unlawful detainer action. That was immediately after the divorce, when the family situation broke down. So that was his first notice. That's what would trigger the statute of limitations if it applies. That's what would trigger latches if it applies. And Cusdy brought his quiet title action immediately after that unlawful detainer action, well within 3 years. So while we argue that none of those doctrines apply, even if they did, this would be a timely action. another doctrine that plays into that is equitable tolling, where a plaintiff is induced to delay bringing an action by the conduct of the defendant. Here, Landis said, don't worry, we'll deliver the title to you. And so Cuzdy relied on that. He was led to wait and not bring that action. And so even if the statute of limitations were triggered earlier as a matter of law, as a matter of equity, he should not be penalized, and that statute should be tolled until the time when Landis made it evident that she was making a claim to own the property. Just briefly, I want to address the idea that this case was frivolous. Under the statute and also under the standards applicable in this court, an action must be frivolous as a whole before attorney fees can be awarded. And here, at the very least, Cuzdy's claim to the Nova Mobile home was not frivolous. Landis admitted that there was an agreement that Cuzdy paid it in full. The result is Cuzdy is the owner, and he's entitled to have title quieted to that. So it's not frivolous. Attorney fees, the trial court abused its discretion, and we would ask this court to reverse the trial court's orders in their entirety.
Thank you, counsel.